Hi there, Ralph. How are you doing today?
Hey, Peter. Yeah, I'm good. Excellent.
Marvelous. So, as always, the traditional introduction is to say hello there, one and all. Welcome to this week's edition of the Weekly Chat. He's Ralph. I'm Peter. Let's do this. So there you go.
Hello.
Doesn't sound scripted at all.
No, especially it wasn't very impressive because you forgot what it actually was halfway
Yeah, true.
through and
Yeah.
stumbled. And of
Yeah.
course, people can't see us, so
No,
normally
no.
I wave and
That's right.
nobody
Well,
sees that anyway.
so
So.
last week, if you remember, obviously we only did this on audio, as you know, Ralph forgot his clothes, so there was that. This week, I'm having a bad hair day, so we decided to do it like this. Today we're going to be talking. Oh, actually, let's talk about quickly refer to why. So we're doing this today, right? Because normally we record this on a Sunday, but we're doing this today, the Saturday, because you're going to be doing something pretty amazing tomorrow, aren't you?
Well, I'm not sure it is going to be pretty amazing. I hope it's going to be. I gave my wife some Christmas presents, and this one involves what is known as a circus skill experience.
Nice.
And so there are some businesses here in London which sell you circus skills like trampolining and athletics and juggling and stuff. And we are going to do high trapezing tomorrow.
Nice. Nice.
Well, then this sounds a lot more dramatic than it's actually going to be, because you're always roped on and there's no safe no, there's no danger here, because obviously these are all beginners, and I mean, let's face it, who would be an experienced circus skill performer, you know? But so it's going to be completely sanitized, and but it does sound good, doesn't it?
It
It's
does
going to
sound
be
good. It does
interesting.
sound good. Yeah, I hope it goes very well. I hope it goes very well. Right, let's talk about the two topics we're going to cover today. So the first one is the Reddit IPO, and which went very well, up something like 48% on the first day of trading. Then we would also be moving on to talk about the trend that was referred to in an article in this week's Daily Telegraph, which is the increased incidence of rage quitting, which is also known as quit talk, where people film themselves being fired, without the knowledge of the HR or the company or whatever, and then proceed to publish this on social media. So we're going to talk about that as well. So the first first up is Reddit, the IPO. I mean, I think, I suppose I won't sugarcoat this. I don't think that this company is that good. I think that it's a lot. There's a lot of hype here. I feel that it's a collection of opinions that are from people who are informed and people who are not informed. And then there's the most dangerous mix of all, those who are not informed but feel that they are very informed. So I mean, they did really well on the first day. This is really interesting because obviously there'd been a lack of deals. This has affected everyone in the deals food chain, if you like. So investment banks have been cutting back on people. You've got professional services companies, like accountancies, like management consultancies and things, also cutting back because of deal flow. So something like this, a successful tech IPO is something that a lot of that is in the interests of a lot of people. They floated this week. It all looked good. What are your thoughts on this, Ralph?
Well, I thought it was interesting to see that they were IPOing at all, if I'm honest with you, because I also wonder exactly what Reddit is. I mean, I can see how it would benefit a user, but I do not immediately see how their user base is readily monetized. And of course, you need to see monetization and a reliably demonstrable earnings flow, revenue flow for investors wanting to buy into this, literally buy into this in an IPO. So when I was, because I don't know Reddit very well, but you are right. I mean, this is basically a site which offers a collection of chat rooms, which they call this something else. Oh, subreddits is what Reddit calls it, but it's basically a chat room. And people are coming together in these chat rooms to chat, to discuss stuff. And sometimes this can actually be very good, and sometimes it can be more mundane. So just to amuse you guys, I'm going to read out some of these typical sort of user commentary which you find in these chat rooms. I mean, one I won't read out because that's an example of some high-level stuff which you can also find. I mean, I had occasion to look something up to do with mathematics, and I wanted to know how the Weierstrass factorization theorem works and is derived. And
I've often wondered myself.
Actually. Yes, many people do. Yeah. In fact, I see people wandering around, gazing in the middle distance, thinking, how did Weierstrass in 1870 derive this? And on Reddit, I did find a guy who is a PhD in mathematics who actually offered a very good and lucid explanation of this. Mm. And Weierstrass's factorization theorem, that's not easy. That's not something you would learn at school. This is often something which you wouldn't even learn at university. So this is very high-level stuff. On the other end of the scale, I found a chat room talking about loo rolls. And here is some of the insights which I can offer. Here is a person saying, quote, if you're dropping your logs at home, you're still a significant contributor to the toilet roll reduction.
Yeah.
Unquote. I mean, this is all to do with student accommodation. And here's another.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Yes. And here's another person saying, how long is a piece of toilet roll? Which is actually funny.
Yeah.
So you can find some funny comments. And here is one opining that, quote, men only wipe after pooping. Okay. The quote runs on, but I spare you the rest because it gets a little bit more graphic.
All right, okay.
After this. So anyway, I'm obviously being facetious. I'm obviously tongue-in-cheek, but I just wanted to, guys.
Facetious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. There's another person here who said something, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, this is the only way to get to the bottom of this.
Okay.
And the person wasn't even aware that might be funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, so obviously this is not directly related to what we're discussing here. And you guys will all know what Reddit is. But just so that we're on the same page, this can really, the contributions to the various chat rooms clearly range from the esoteric to the mundane. Let's put it this way. Now, but that's all fine because it gives users a benefit. And like I said, my Weierstrass thing, I got a very good explanation of it. I mean, so I certainly benefited. So I can see that there is a market for this and that this company will have a position in the marketplace. What I cannot readily see is how this is monetized. Where does the revenue come from? Clearly, people do not pay a fee for this. So it comes from the usual revenue generation activity on social media, which is advertising. And the other bit would be that people have a data licensing contract with some other users, like Reddit, for example, has a licensing deal with Google, which is worth about $60 million a year. So that's the sort of revenue stream which is coming here. But let's look at the IPO, because the reason that I was interested in this is twofold. First of all, I thought, well, they're doing an IPO. This is very strange. Why would anybody buy into this, given the lack of and difficulty of how to monetize the platform? And then what happened is that in the book building exercise pre to the IPO, or as part of the IPO, the IPO investment banking involvement part, when the IPO is being produced, then the book is being built and an indicative price range is coming out of this. And the price range was $31 to $34. That's fine. It's about a 10% spread, and that's quite normal to have a spread like this. So there's nothing nothing particularly weird going on there. But then on the first day of trading, the shares rocked up to $50, which is about 50% of the top end of the price range. And that is strange, because why, as ever, we've talked about this many times before, people would buy into an IPO if they believe that it is underpriced, and they would only believe it is underpriced if they think that the earnings generation capacity of the company in question is on a DCF, on a discounted cash flow basis, worth more than the current price indicated. I mean, in this particular case, it's in the minds of people buying into this, literally buying into this, it was 50% underpriced. And so I'm getting to a view that if a business such as Reddit, the earnings generation capacity of which lives mostly, if not entirely, in a projection of what they might do in the future, if a business of this nature can float and generate a market capitalization of $7 billion, 50% more than the IPO price range indicated, then clearly there is a lot here which points towards, we discussed that before, the hype cycle again. Because one particular thing caught my eye, and this is that in the pre-IPO meetings which people had with investment bankers, Reddit was selling itself on the idea that its content was used to train AI, train LLMs, large language models such as ChatGPT and Gemini, etc. And that apparently was enough for people psychologically to link this business with the arguably sexiest cutting-edge high-tech business which we currently have, which is artificial intelligence. And so I think that this 50% premium which the share attracted on the first day of trading reflects entirely a psychological AI premium, which is beginning to come into tech evaluations or tech valuations, and reminds me of things like the dot-com boom in the noughties. And so, yeah, linking back to the hype cycle, where we had an entire episode devoted to how that one works, I'm thinking that seeing this IPO to me is highlights a position on the hype cycle. We are sort of moving up to what the hype cycle calls the peak of exaggerated expectations.
Yeah.
But we are not there yet, but we're moving up it now. And that's in itself not a bad thing, because it might mean that at some point, as we're moving through the hype cycle, we are going towards a situation where indeed we are going to have a more sustainable situation in this technology, and where we actually are going to see real world commoditized AI applications. But this one is hardly, I can't see it. Maybe this is just my ignorance or lack of vision, but this one is hardly going to be it.
I mean, I'm very skeptical about, say, companies using the content on Reddit to train, because, You know, I think that the quality of the information that you get out of something like a ChatGPT depends very much on the quality of the information going in to chat to the, you know, the language, the LLM.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that the quality of the information on Reddit is variable. So, you know, I mean, you're going to get, you know, like I say, you're going to get some very informed and useful stuff. You are going to get some completely useful, you know, you're going to get people who know nothing, who are just putting stuff on there. And then you then get the worst kind, which are the people that think they know stuff, but in fact don't know nothing, putting on there. And you end up with not necessarily a good average in terms of the standard of information. And therefore, although it may be a source for training a model, it definitely should not be the main source. Because like I say, it means this will, if you feed it rubbish, then it's not really going to come. It's like, you know, you don't put your diesel in an F1 car, you know. I mean, it's
yeah. I don't know exactly how the weights are here, but you know that LLMs, we discussed that also in the past, and where I said that for an LLM, more is better. So the more data it is trained on, the better the outcome. And which is why the leading LLMs such as ChatGPT are typically trained on the entirety of content on the internet. And we need to actually let this sink in and percolate a little bit of what I just said, because that was not supposed to be a metaphor. I'm not saying most of it or something that is a bit like most of it. It really means the entirety. There are compressed files which these people download, which actually encapsulate everything that is written on the internet up to the moment of download, which therefore means that within a vastness of data of that magnitude, whatever is on the Reddit site specifically is unlikely to create a measurable bias of the outcome of any one specific LLM. Or so I claim. I have to admit that I haven't actually done any research on this, nor am I in a position to know. It's just a view which I have, because also, you see, Reddit is one contributor to the content on the internet, but it's of course only one. We have Twitter, which arguably is a larger platform. And to be honest with you, what I just read out is probably, in terms of intellectual quality, a lot better than anything which I read on an average day on Twitter. So I don't, or X as it is called. So I don't know. I mean, it's not as if LLMs are better because they're trained on Financial Times content exclusively. They're better if they use more data. Nevertheless, this is something for another podcast. It's out there. The jury is out to decide how specifically bias is generated in LLM output and how much data of a specific nature you need in order to create such a bias. But it's different if you actually create specific AIs trained on a specific subset of data. So if you had a Reddit AI, or LLM, that would of course then reflect specifically the quality which is on the site. I personally don't think that's necessarily going to be the issue. My problem is more with what I outlined, but your point is still interesting, because Reddit was able to attract a AI rating, an AI premium to its IPO price, because it pointed out in the pre-marketing meetings that its platform was used as in support of AI training. And so, you know, if what I'm saying is correct, then that shouldn't actually matter because it hopelessly dilutes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. My guess is that there is a lot of psychology here going on, and people are just buying into anything which is vaguely related to artificial intelligence, just as they used to buy into anything which had a .com address. I mean, you guys will not remember this, but the internet didn't exist always.
Yeah, it's like everything's .com. What's so special about that? But
exactly. But yeah. at the time, that was pretty cool, and I still remember seeing things like on London Red Buses advertisements for company, and they had like an internet address ending in .com, and I thought, whoa, yeah, these guys are cool.
Lastminute.com, eh?
Yeah, exactly. We of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Of which we actually were involved in that.
I didn't want to say, but we were indeed, absolutely.
We were involved in that, yeah. But anyway, I sort of looking at this, I feel that it is very much in the interests of all in the sort of deal food chain. So that's the investment bankers, the lawyers, the accountants, the consultants, etc. That this is a successful IPO, and by successful IPO, it means that there is uplift in the shares generally. People feel that they've done right by buying in the IPO and seeing that the share price is going up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because of that, I feel that they, because of this, they will be more likely to push it when it's not necessarily amazing on the fundamentals, if you see what I mean. With these things, so I don't know the ins and outs, I have to admit, but with these things, there tend to be like lock-up period, lock-in periods and things where certain categories are not allowed to sell for certain amounts of time. You've also got underwriters. Generally, you have underwriters in a deal whose job it is to sort of, they say, stabilize the share price in the aftermath of an IPO. But it's within everyone's interest to make sure this goes well, because I always think, when you see an IPO and let's say it goes up 100% on the first day, as a company, I would be very annoyed with the advice that I had from the investment bank helping me to float, because I'm thinking, well, I could have got a whole load more money if we'd actually priced this deal higher. So, but anyway, in this case, I don't know. I think that the valuation, has come down from previous highs
in fundraising round.
I don't know. This
highlights something which is always present in any valuation, but is specifically of interest in those stocks where most of the value is assigned through expected projected growth. And obviously, this is obvious, it's common sense. I mean, I basically say, well, a valuation basically is a discounted cash flow of future earnings. And if I'm thinking the earnings of this company, let's say earnings of company A are going to go up by 5% a year, well, then obviously the valuation of that company is going to be lower than that of company B, where I think the earnings are going to go up by 30% a year. So that's just common sense, and it makes sense. The issue is, how do analysts and the city and Wall Street in general get to a consensus on what is a reasonable expectation of that growth rate? And that is where things always get unstuck. If they do, but that's where the issue is, because in this particular case, you would definitely have to say that, well, $34, and that was already the top end of the IPO price range, was too low. It was a low ball offer. People were happy to pay $50 for it. But why exactly? As I said before, and I'm going to repeat this just one more time, because first of all, it's unclear how this can be monetized at all. But whatever can be monetized will then have to grow. And just to illustrate that, I just give you a sort of idea of what that growth rate is, because basically as an analyst, as a fund manager as well, you will need to have access to historical growth data, and these you project out into the future, and that is basically the lifeblood of the valuation which you're then going to get. And just reading out to you guys some of these growth numbers, and this is going to be the most fascinating part of this podcast. I'm just going to give you a range of numbers.
Nice.
And so basically, this is what I'm going to articulate here. This is the average daily, let's say, visitor to the Reddit chat rooms. So 55 million, for example, is a number which you're going to hear. So 55 million is an average daily visitor flow to any across the Reddit chat rooms in the first quarter in 2021. So I'm going to give you just some numbers just so that you can see for yourself what the growth trends historically have been. Every number relates to one quarter. I'm starting with the first quarter in 21, then the second quarter in 21, and so on. And so without further commentary, just the numbers so that you can hear this now. So starting in first quarter, 21, 55, 54, 54, 54. Spotting a trend already, are we?
Mm-hmm.
Going sideways, isn't it? It's not going up.
Mm-hmm.
58, okay, but that's an outlier. Let's forget about that. Going back to 57, 57, 57, 60. So you can see there is a trend. It is trending upwards, but very, very slowly. So I've arrived at 60. Moving on, 60. And now 66. That's 10% up. 73. That's another 8%. So basically what we're seeing here, that the growth trend, which clearly has been priced into these shares, has basically been generated by the last two quarters. I can reveal to you, because I was anal enough to calculate this, that this is a average growth rate over the period of 11%. But if you take out the last two quarters, then you have an average growth of 4%. Now, 4% is the growth rate, which if you have that as a retailer, you would be disappointed in it.
Yeah.
4% is not a great, interesting, shiny growth trend. You have to do better. 11% is good. If that can be sustained every year, fine. But I have a feeling as if more than 11% was priced into the valuation of this, and that 11% would have been generated by just two recent quarters of growth, which can very easily fall away. And even then, I still don't know whether these numbers of daily visitors are readily transferable into monetizable gain. And so that is in the end why I'm more than skeptical about how real this valuation is, and commensurately by extension, I would actually be skeptical of pretty much any tech stock, the revenue generation of which is not linked to something tangible, such as chat rooms, basically, chat room websites, when they come to market. And that is where you find the AI premium, and that is where markets overheat.
I agree. And I mean, I'll just quickly say that, you know, I am obviously, as you can work out, you know, I'm very cynical about this. And I do think the reason why they went to market now, when you could argue that IPO market is still not quite there yet. The reason why they did it now is because they think that they can get a decent valuation now and that it's going to actually go down in the ensuing months. So I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see how it goes. The main thing is you don't judge the success of an IPO by one day's trading, 1 week's trading, whatever. You need to make sure that all the lock-ins and all that kind of stuff are all, you know, are all shaken out of the system.
Yeah.
That's when you really see what the actual performance is like. So obviously, we'll just have to wait.
Yeah.
Right. So next thing. So I had a bit of a rant this week about this. This was an interesting story from the Daily Telegraph. And it was talking about why attention-seeking generation, you know, why attention-seeking Gen Z workers are rage quitting. So basically, this is a trend of rage quitting, also referred to as quit talk, because basically what happens with this trend is that people are losing their jobs and they film themselves losing their jobs. And then they show what it's like and, you know, basically dish the dirt on their employers, essentially. So so my initial thoughts, so it was interesting. So there was one example of one person who had done this, posted about it and was pretty defiant, saying, you know, I don't care. You know, if people see this and they don't want to employ me, because I wouldn't want to work for a company that would that is not okay with showing this kind of thing on social media, which I think is an absolutely ridiculous thing to say, because no one or no company in their right mind is going to want to employ someone with that degree of naivety. I think that it shows ignorance, it shows immaturity, and it just is just so wrong on so many levels, in my humble opinion. And I know, of course, that people will be thinking, well, Peter, you know, please just get off the fence. You know, you need to tell us what you actually think. So, you know, the reason why I feel so strongly about this is because the fact of the matter is, you know, and I can say this having been a recruiter, having, you know, done all this stuff before, you are going to, you know, if you've got people that are coming through and that you are going to potentially employ them, you know, there's a lot of this stuff about you know, from the candidate's point of view, oh, this is, you know, it's just as much an interview of you interviewing the company and seeing if they're right. But it's not. I mean, well, it sort of is. But the fact of the matter is you're not doing them a favor because you haven't joined them yet and you've done nothing for them yet. The employer is doing you a favor, and they are the ones who are taking on risk by employing you. Because, you know, I mean, there's risk on your side, of course, because you don't know what they're like, but they don't know what you're like. And they're the ones that are going to be paying you, not you paying them. So from that perspective, I feel that, you know, they are perfectly entitled to make sure that whoever they are employing is someone that they feel would be a good fit, would work well in the company, and is someone that could represent the company well. All right. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so these days, the employers or any employer with more than one brain cell is actually going to look into your social media activity. Now, I would also say that what they are doing, they're not doing this just for the good of their health. What they're trying to do is they're trying to see whether the person that they saw in the interview process matches up or is consistent with what they do outside the workplace. Now, I know there's a school of thought out there where they say it's not got nothing to do with you, what I do outside the workplace. I would say no. I think that it's important because you want to know whether some, you know, how how someone's likely to behave. I mean, you know, in given any given circumstance, you know, if things get stressful, are they gonna fall, are they gonna crumble? are they gonna react well? Do they need support? You know, all this kinds of thing, right? And I think that what you do outside work reflects the sort of person that you are as much as what you do inside work. So I think that something like this, so this person basically said, I got loads of offers to work and stuff. Again, that is A, according to her, and B, it is also, I would suggest that the companies that have offered to employment are probably not companies that most people have heard of. They may well think that they can get a cheap employee, and that they're really going to, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them to repeat this performance, because then they're just going to look like someone who just flakes, quits, films it, puts it on, and no employer's going to want that. They're going to look for your what you've done on social media. Does that weigh up? Does that make sense? Do you make sense as a person, is what they're trying to that's what they're trying to assess. And if they're the fact of the matter is, if there are there's a final list of two people, one who has a questionable social media presence, as in controversial, extreme, anything like that, versus someone who, you know, is fairly conventional or just, you know, nice stuff, then they're going to pick the one that is less risky. And although that sounds wrong and people are going to say, oh my God, that's terrible, and you know, you shouldn't just pick like that, I have to say, in the real world, people do not want to, you know, employers do not want to take on risky people. And therefore, the one that has the less of this kind of quit talk stuff in their feed are going to be doing better. But anyway, sorry, I ranted again then. I ranted actually in a written form on Thursday's Watson's Daily. But what are your thoughts, Ralph?
Well, I was astounded to, excuse me, my... clearly, I'm
feeling emotional.
My voice is gone. Yeah, totally. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that there is something such as rage quitting. Mm. I find the word amusing. It's a bit like road rage. That's what that reminds me of.
I tell you what, actually, just as an aside, there's this rage quitting. I also quite like the phrase. Revenge spending as well, you know, when people were coming back from COVID and they go, right, I'm gonna take my revenge out on COVID by spending loads of money. But anyway, so that's revenge spending. Now we're talking about rage quitting. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, so rage quitting, very, very strange thing, you see. So where are my thoughts on this? Let me create a little bit of a context here. And the context is, what I'm trying to do is a little bit explore or sound out the environment of what might be ethically acceptable for an employer to do and what might perhaps not be in this sphere of looking at people's social media presence. So the first thing which sprang to mind when I saw this was to remind myself, whenever you apply to organizations which have a high reputation in this world, Harvard University, Cambridge, Oxford, the top leading European business schools, also, of course, later, the top companies, and I'm not going to name any, we all know who they are. Every time you apply, as part of your application forms which you ask to fill in, they do not only wish to know you in your academic perspective. So it's not enough to say A levels and I got like whatever quintuple first from Harvard or something, you know. But they also want to know what you are doing outside of your academic persona.
Yeah.
They look at or they're looking for a rounded personality. Rounded as defined by something, you know, loosely defined. So if you are a mathematician, yes, you won the Fields Medal when you were 20, so you're clearly very highly bright, but do you also do something else? And the candidate who might be able to say, well, I've got, I work for the local charity twice a week, or I have got piano lessons which I give to people, or something, you know. Or I'm a sports person. I like doing this. I have attained some level of demonstrable competence in any particular sport. It's that sort of thing, and this is completely legitimate, and it has been going on for forever. I mean, ever since, you know, I'm obviously not applying to these type of organizations anymore, but when I did, that's all that they all wanted this. And just to share a private note with you guys, this is the thing which I always fell down on because I didn't really have many interests outside of my academic existence. But so this is perfectly acceptable. So this is my first point. It's legitimate for employers to look at the components, the facets of a person's personality, which are not reflected in their academic career, etc. But when they do that in the application form, they're basically asking for this input. They're asking the candidate to freely offer this particular input. So you might say that this is slightly different then. But it is only, if it is different, it is only very slightly different because they're asking for it. So in response to them eliciting this piece of information, you freely give it to them. But when you post on social media, of course, you're also freely giving this information about you to the world. I'm not a lawyer, so please, guys, forgive me, be lenient with me, but I believe that it counts as a publication when you put something out there about yourself. You publish something on a social media platform and it is then forever out there. It has been published and disseminated with the intention to be disseminated to a public audience to be consumed as content by this audience. And so people who do that can't then very easily turn around and say, ah, Mr. Employer, you basically acted in violation of your ethical responsibility by looking at my Facebook page. Or so I believe. So that's the first point, or that's the second point, basically. And so if you create this type of context, then it becomes, I think, reasonably obvious that whatever you post about your private life, about the about your personality out there into social media, will contribute to your online presence and will be consumed and noticed by other parties, employers, very importantly, included. And so now specifically to this then. So here we have somebody filming themselves in their, what I'm going to call politely, exit interview. And then crying about it openly on the internet, creating a situation as if they were somehow victimized by a callous corporate entity, inviting commiseration for their fate. And I would also echo you there in saying that this is an astoundingly immature position for somebody to have who has passed the age of 12. And you guys know me by now. I sometimes can be quite vicious, and I have no time for people like that. And when I say no, I actually do mean that.
Mm.
If I was an employer, I would just leave these people, you know, fall by the wayside.
Mm.
Because, and not because...
Basically, let natural selection take its course.
It is, in fact, natural, isn't it? But there's a subtle and deeper point here. Not because I'm vindictive as a corporate member of HR or future boss of this person who would be working in my team, but because the inclination of acting in this way does tell you something about that person's, well, personality. Mm. And if you are given to vindictive tantrums of this nature, then it, well, I would say it follows, but you still have justifiable reason to expect a person of this nature to act in unprofessional ways, in certain situations which the job might entail. And so then we get to jobs which are customer facing, investment banking, stockbroking, the legal profession. And I would therefore say that this type of activity, this is the first, the superficial level, the top type of activity, you do make it harder for yourself to build a career. But I would say, reading this, that I would question that if you have the personality to do this in the first place, I would question whether you're actually interested in building a professional career. Mm. And this is something which the corporate world will, of course, see. And therefore, rage quitting is interesting in terms of a sociological phenomenon. You know, if I had to write a thesis in social sciences, I would actually probably find this very interesting. But it's certainly not in the interest of the person doing this. And one does wonder why so many feel the need or feel justified to act in this particular way.
Mm. I mean, I definitely feel that, you know, if you feel that aggrieved, you need to put the energy that you would put into, you know, filming something like this and editing it and then putting it out and doing the hashtags and all that. You're better off putting that energy into finding a job.
Yes.
Because, you know, this is another thing as well, because I feel that sometimes, I mean, I'm all for helping people. Obviously, because that's what I'm doing. You know, that's what I'm trying to do with this podcast. You know, but I'm all for helping people. But I think, you know, sometimes there, and this is going to sound like I'm a real old man, but it's okay because I'm old. Is that, you know, sometimes you have to look back at you have a different perspective when you look back at things. You know, when things have calmed down, you know, you may look back on something and think, oh God, actually the reason why I behaved like that was because I was under this, that, and the other stress, and this was going on, and God, I wish I hadn't done that. And you have regrets. But the problem is with this, you not only have regret, but there's physical evidence of you acting in this way.
Hmm.
And that could potentially restrict your progress, or certainly it will delay the trajectory of your career, because, you know, it may well be that was one off, things were bad, you know, you had a bad day and you just published and it went, you know, it went viral. You didn't realize it would.
Yeah.
And then for the next few years, every time you go to an interview, you are going to have to answer that. You know, so why did you do this? What happened? You know, all that. Until you maybe get a job where, in fact, you then do quite well, in which case then it becomes less of an issue. But the problem is for some time, it will be an issue. And therefore, like I say, you are essentially making your future career building needlessly difficult. You are literally putting barriers in your own way by doing something like this. So, I mean, you know, I think obviously we both feel quite strongly about this, but, you know, I do feel that, you know, it this needs to be said, because I know that the, you know, sort of it, like there's a thing on social media about sharing your journey and all that kind of thing. And that's good in a sense. But sometimes I think there is a line over which you really shouldn't go, because you're just going to do yourself harm. Ultimately.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the modern world as it is shaping up to be puts an extra level of responsibility on anyone alive today, isn't it? I mean, when I was young, I didn't have to think about stuff like this. I mean, actually I did, but only within my own sort of nexus of people. I mean, for example, yes, of course. I mean, if I had behaved in an outrageously antisocial way in my hometown, this might have come back to my teachers, and they might have, there might have been consequences from it. But that would have been it. I mean, there is no amplification of that. It would not be viral. Nobody else would hear about this, and it would remain contained. So this is something which is now new. Whatever you do on the internet may become viral. That doesn't have to be, of course, but it will always be there and will be findable, so to speak, by somebody who would like to look. But some of these things, they do go viral, and one needs to, I think, it's, I used to have a test when I was a stockbroker. It was the Financial Times test. The Daily Mail test, which is even a sharper test, which is everything I say to a client or write in a paper, would I like that to be the headline in a Daily Mail article the following day?
Okay.
And if the answer to that is no, then maybe I should tone down my language or find ways of expressing it more neutrally. This is a good test, actually, to employ the Daily Mail test for your social media activity. And if you do, then that doesn't mean that you don't have any social media activity, not at all. It just means that you share your journey with others, which can actually be a really beautiful thing. Even if I say this as old as I am. But it will then actually be perhaps to your advantage, because you do show yourself as a rounded person with lots of facets to your personality, but they are all normal things. And that doesn't need to mean that it can't, you know, I mean, in my thing, your Instagram page, you will find action sport photos and stuff, which people might think is a silly thing to do because I'm taking risks. So it doesn't have to be sanitized. It just has to be yourself, and it has to be interesting. And so one should monitor perhaps any more extreme outpourings such as rage quitting. That does not appear to be something which I would associate with a responsible person, and other people will not do either. And if one wishes to avoid that, then don't put these on. On the other hand, if you're not worried about this, if you don't care, by all means ruin your career. Nobody will really mind.
It's harsh but true.
It's not as if society owes a particular generation, a particular group of people, any particular job or debt or whatever. You act in a particular way, you will elicit a particular response.
And I would just say that I feel in trying to encapsulate this and use a decent analogy, I feel that the trend of rage quitting or you know doing a quit talk It's basically the employment equivalent of revenge porn, because that's basically kind of what you're doing. Same kind of damage. but yeah, but there you go. So on that note, I mean, did you want to add anything else?
No, it's just circling back to the to last week when we talked about banning TikTok. I don't know how this works. Can I understand why TikTok is banned in China? It's not because of this, but it's a hotbed of uncontrolled information. That's exactly why China is banning it.
Yeah,
just a little annotation.
There we go. Okay, well, look, thank you very much. As always, Ralph, always good fun. Thank you very much for listening, and have a lovely day, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, have a lovely weekend, and wish me luck for the high trapeze tomorrow.
Brilliant.
okay, thank you very much for listening, guys. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.